Hello, America, and to all of our listeners all over the world. You're listening to another exciting edition of Let's Weekend. I'm your host, the most Brandon Perkins. Joining me, as always, is Chris Logie. Say hi to the good people, Chris.
Hello.
Yeah, so this week's episode is going to be for October 26, 2024. It is a pre-Halloween episode, although Halloween doesn't actually happen until next Thursday. But when you hear from us, we will be in the beginning of November again. So, so we're going to go ahead and sort of nail all that Halloween stuff in the bud right now. And you know what? I mean, it's not like we're the only ones who are doing Halloween super freaking early. Like, it wasn't like they started bringing out all the pumpkin stuff out after the end of August or anything. Anyway, what have we got to talk about this week? Well, Rudy Giuliani is in some serious doo-doo, at least financial-wise. The LA Times editor and a bunch of other stuff has been happening with those newspapers, also Washington Post, because they just basically told their editorial departments to go suck eggs about presidential endorsements. We also have some news about the WNBA. We also have some news about Boeing, because you may have heard they've been having issues. And we also have a bunch of entertainment-related stuff, including some trailers, some dates, some news about stuff being removed from release calendars, and all that and more on this week's episode of Let's Weekend. So, to start us off, as always, as is tradition, start off talking about all the things we've been doing up to this point this week. And as also tradition, we start with Chris. Chris, what have you been doing this week?
Well, it's not been a busy week, really. It's been kind of slow.
Yeah.
But I did manage to get out and vote early.
Mm-hmm.
On a Friday morning,
Yeah. Which
went pretty well. Basically went to the the Board of Elections here, which is in, frankly, a very small parking lot of thing. So they had cops and such helping people kind of cycle through and get to open spots and then get the help afterwards. So, yeah, mine took maybe like 5 minutes in and out to get what I needed done, because it wasn't too hard to make all my picks. Voted blue on everything. And the spots that were running unopposed, Republicans, I just didn't vote for them and pick a spot. And voted yes on issue one to get an amendment to stop gerrymandering, or minimize it as much as possible with an independent entity to handle that stuff.
Yep.
Rather than let the Ohio GOP do it. So that was a fun day. And then, where this is at is essentially like it's right next to the highway that has kind of one of those side roads for the businesses nearby to kind of hang out at, so people aren't going, you know, 50 side trying to get to these intersections. So, so right across from where the Board of Elections is at is a lawn that had just about every single sign for a local campaign that you could expect. I think the biggest one was a Harris Walls sign. But the Trump Vance one was hidden somewhere that I found. But yeah, it's good to finally have that done. I don't have to worry about that. And yeah, it's good to have that done. But for things I haven't been, I've been doing outside of that, I've been watching some things. I have watched all the episodes of Agatha All Along that are on Disney Plus right now. I think we have the last episode coming up next week, and it's been very fun. Following up from what happened in WandaVision, as Agatha is kind of trying to get her powers back and sort of enlist these nearby witches that are not part of a coven to go with her on the witch's road. And they go through a bunch of trials of sorts that test each person and their capabilities, I guess, and their worthiness of going down this road. which has been pretty fun. A couple of twists here and there for who some of these characters might be, really, and all that. So, yeah, pretty solid.
Yeah.
Looking forward to the last episode here next week, just in time for Halloween. And that's been that. Also watched all of Tomb Raider, The Legend of Lara Croft on Netflix, which is a solid animated show. Kind of essentially taking the general plot that those games tend to have, where Lara Croft is doing her thing, finds out about these stones of power that are an ancient thing that grants the people that get them, you know, some indescribable powers. There's four of them, and her rival of sorts ends up being the one that beats her to them and starts collecting them all and causing a bunch of crazy weather and damage wherever they go. And yeah, kind of gets to a head as they fight each other directly. And Lara's kind of, this is the reboot trilogy Lara Croft. So she has the big like wall climbing pickaxe thing is one of her main weapons, as well as a bow and arrow and all that. And kind of her defining character trait is being a loner, kind of not wanting others to directly help her at a certain point, and she has to embrace her fears, her insecurities and such to accept help in taking down this guy and all that. And yeah, it's a solid show. All kinds of stuff. And at the end, they get to go to a kind of unreal place that has, say, a bunch of the extinct animals that no longer exist on the rest of the earth. Kind of go through all that kind of supernatural stuff. So, yeah, pretty solid show. Worth checking out if you like Tomb Raider. Just want an animated show that does some fun stuff. The Tomb Raider license. And then, let's see, the last show I watched was watched some more Steven Universe in the 50s somewhere. Basically where they finally start paying off some stuff they've been building up as they have a big sort of alien invasion of at least one big ship from the Gem homeworld that sends this big hand-shaped ship to go take out the crystal gems, to which, you know, they're not well built for the ship. So yeah, it makes for a pretty cool couple of episodes there where they deal with the main attack and the aftermath, because Steven comes out of this realizing the scope of what happened. Potentially anybody he cares about is going to be a potential target for the homeworld that is going after them. So he tries to turn people away. Best friend Connie, and she's very much not wanting that. Kind of refuses to give up on him, in a sense. And they have a whole fun episode where they manage to fuse together. And a weird thing in a way that the other gems do not realize is possible. Which kind of just makes them look like an adult. Which is kind of weird, but yeah, some cool stuff. But that's been pretty much what I've been watching for things I've been playing. I decided to start Alan Wake 2 as they put out a recent update for their anniversary of the release last year. And it had some really good accessibility options so that you can kind of really neuter the effect of the combat to so the enemies that stalk around. And make that a less scary game, at least for that part of it. They do have some other options for minimizing some of the weird jump scares they do.
Yeah.
Which are all kind of really dumb from what I've seen. Or it's just all of a sudden you're playing the game and then like a half second, a weird picture shows up of whatever the bad guy is, kind of making a mean face or something like that. And it's like not really an interesting like jump scare in any way. It's just like, oh, you just like loaded up an image real quick for some reason. It seems like a very cheap thing to do. But yeah, I've gotten through both of the intros for Saga and Alan Wake. As you sort of kick off the investigation with Saga Anderson and Alex Casey kind of trying to figure out what all is going on at this at Bright Falls. As they've heard of a dead body that's washed up in a very weird manner that seems tied to whatever they were doing before, what they were investigating before with cult stuff. And yeah, it gets real weird and all that. So much so that the sheriff that is helping them, it's like, oh yeah, I have a bunch of more of these like manuscript pages to give you. And then he just disappears in the middle of that. To which you'll see him again a little bit later in Alan's dealing with the dark places he's trying to escape after 15 years over there. Which I would say so far is the worst part of the game, because I don't think his combat is all that interesting. So I have invincibility on, which means enemies don't do damage to me. And so the only thing they can do is like when they grab onto you to like knock you around or whatever, that's like the only thing I have that they can do to me. So that particular area, you essentially are dealing with these weird, like semi-transparent enemies that are just hanging around. And if you don't have your flashlight on, you can sometimes walk past them. Sometimes they'll get aggro if you're too close to them or whatever, or if you're running. But other than that, it's just not really satisfying combat in any way compared to like Saga Anderson, where you're fighting more concrete enemies and such. Though I don't really like the wolves that show up, because they remind me of what's his name, Gamork from the Neverending Story.
Yeah,
where it's like, oh yeah, it's a fucked up black wolf that's got glowing eyes hanging out in these dark woods. So I'm glad I have the invincibility off, because those ones are particularly tough to deal with, because they just kind of running around a bunch and then just dart at you, which can be tough to see when you're in the woods with you know, bushes and whatnot blocking your view of them. This kind of makes the combat more manageable. Also makes it easier in seeing like, oh, you don't really have to worry about running out of bullets, really, because they have plenty of opportunities to either just straight up drop bullets, or you could find tons of stashes with randomly generating, you know, items in them depending on what you need. So if you're in need of, you know, pistol ammo, there'll probably be some pistol ammo in one of them, or health items, that kind of stuff.
Batteries, things like that.
So I'm basically putting all the health items in the shoebox, because I don't really need them at this point. I'm not taking damage. And the help with that first boss fight with Nightingale, which is a pretty cool sort of setup for a boss fight that kind of has you running loops in the in this area and running into a lot of tricky environments as it's kind of throwing you through different parts of this like forest level area that's is tough, because the boss kind of just runs away for good chunks of the time, and then as you get close to him, he starts charging at you, and you gotta deal with that. Luckily, with invincibility, the most that he does is just knocks you over kind of stuff, and makes it easier with the combat. Just sit there and just like, all right, I'll just pump some shotgun shells into you and just take some damage, and beat it pretty soon after that. But yeah, lets me kind of more focus on the story stuff that is going on. And yeah, like the the coolest part of the Alan Wake stuff is that you essentially go into these areas that you can mess with in your storyboard section and just like, well, here's the base version of this area, but here it is if the main hook is, you know, a missing FBI agent or, you know, the cult is here or the torchbearers or whatever else is there. Though it's annoying at times because I've had it where I didn't have anything I could do. It was just more navigating around. And Alan just like, well, there's something I can do with the storyboards. And it's like, no, you're not in the area that it needs. It's like they kind of are hinting at things that you can't actually do. And it's that kind of stuff is pretty annoying. It's less of an issue with Saga Anderson because you're not having that kind of control. It's more just keeping track of what's going on around you and sort of a lot of like collectible based stuff. But you're also learning things about the cult and the area and all that kind of stuff that you input stuff in. So there's sometimes where it's like, oh, there's this way that they can hint to how you do a puzzle, but none of the puzzles are all that difficult. The worst ones are like, oh, you need a number for this combination. And it's like, well, if you can get at least two of them, you can brute force it. And others are like, oh, look around for where there's a number. And it's like, oh, the most inventive one was this employee roster list in the park. And I was like, oh, you have to note which ones they are talking about. And that's the number on the keypad that you have to hit. But otherwise, it's... nothing really too complicated for that stuff, which I imagine is because they're trying to make it pretty accessible on that stuff. But yeah, I got to the part where it starts to open up as far as you can focus on Alan Wake's stuff or Saga stuff, which I'm mainly doing Saga stuff, going to the trailer park in Watery, which is a whole weird place. It's a very small, like, fishing village kind of area that has the theme park that is based around coffee, run by the two guys that, one, are definitely not American. You can definitely tell they're just people on the dev team that's were good on the camera. They're like, we're just going to have them everywhere because they run commercials for the various businesses they do where they make beer and run a like an escort service to go hiking around the area. And they run a theme park and a trailer park, and it's like, oh my god, these guys, they look like they're disheveled weirdos, but they're secretly rich and own much of these towns. So but they have some very good like F&B commercials with a lot of dumb jokes and such in them that are pretty good. But yeah, that's Alan Wake 2. Pretty good stuff. So I'm looking forward to put some more time into that. And the other one I've been playing a bunch of is Power Wash Simulator. I'm nearly finished with the Shrek DLC. I'm on the last job of that. I think most of this goes through the first two movies, but the last stage is just the Dragon Slayer that the dragon hangs out at, which is from the first movie, and I don't know where else it shows up at. But basically, Donkey and Dragon are out on a trip, and Donkey hires you to clean up. It's covered in soot and such all around the place. You just got a huge pile of treasure and statues and such in this room and all that kind of stuff. Which is pretty fun to jump around and clean. Basically trying to do the last achievement here, which is to not clean these tapestries. So I'm just getting around there, trying to clean everything else but them, and then finish those up at the end. Yeah, what are the other... You need to clean Shrek's swamp, because during the second movie, Donkey and some of the other fairy creatures, or the fairy tale creatures, are hanging out in his house while he's leaving, and he just kind of gives up trying to tell him to get the fuck out at a certain point. So they've made a huge mess, especially like a lot of pixie dust and such are all over the place, so it's very kind of colorful dirt that is pretty unique for Power Wash Simulator stages. So, yeah, that's been fun, especially if you kind of pay attention to some of the movies and know sort of where these things happen at. That adds a little bit to it. And the next thing I'll be doing is they added a Halloween stage, I think it's in a haunted house, so that'll be fun to work on. But yeah, that's been pretty much it for me. So, Brandon, what have you been doing?
Well, as for me, I am just about finished with Metaphor ReFantazio. And yeah, that game is amazing. But I will tell you right off the bat, the last boss battle for that game is a freaking marathon. Like, it legitimately is. Because, and I've already tried it twice and died both times, so. But the last time took me close to half an hour. Because I really don't want to go too far into it, because I really don't want to spoil anything. But basically, the last boss ends up sprouting like three faces that you then have to kill each one of them. And the thing is, each one of these will occasionally have what they call a sacrifice, where they'll eat like an effigy of one of the members of the party, and it'll give them like a temporary magic boost where they can like unleash these really strong magical attacks that can like severely weaken the entire party. And on top of all that, you also, after you get rid of all three of those masks, you then have one last like actual fight where like the three faces split open and the actual face is exposed. And he has like six actions that he can use. And sometimes they'll use an ability that a lot of bosses, one that you can eventually get to called Soul Scream, where it'll give you like a couple of additional actions to use. So that's like a total of like 9 actions that he can occasionally use to hit you with. Now, the good thing is, unlike some of the like the Persona games, if you end up like if anybody misses an attack or they successfully block an attack, that'll actually knock a couple of the actions off of the roster. It might prematurely end the turn. But that really only, you know, that's kind of a 1 in 6 type of thing. It doesn't happen that often. But yeah, it's a really, God, that this game is really legitimately amazing. But on top of that, I've been taking advantage of my PS Plus account, and I've been playing Good Smoke, specifically the new version, the version that came out recently. And, that game is really good. And it's definitely a lot more intense than the original was. And the original was already pretty intense. I haven't really gotten that far into it. All I will say, though, is that unlike in the first game, where it was like you could kind of see a lot of the enemies coming from a mile away, in this case, they will sneak up on you very quickly if you were not watching out. And they also aren't. One of the like other differences was that in the original game, when they came at you to attack you, they would kind of slow down just to sort of give you a chance to, you know, get the plasma cutter in place so you can start dismembering them. Not here. They will attack you on sight, and they are not too keen on giving you an advantage. So yeah, there is that. And other than that, you know, I'm just doing more music stuff. I started listening to Visual K stuff again because I just felt like it, and you know, felt like the season to do it, considering it's the spooky times and everything. And really, other than that, we've also been having like some real like warm October weather this week. it's been up in like the 80s. Today it was like 88. The high was 88. And it's been relatively warm this week. But the thing is, because, you know, it's Georgia and it's the South. Yeah, it could get up to, you know, 88 or whatever. But when it gets nighttime, it'll like drop down into the 40s. So, you know, it's hot. Days are hot and mornings and nights are fairly cool. That's just sort of how it is down here. But yeah, that's pretty much what I've been doing. So is there anything you want to add, Chris, before we move on?
Nope.
No? Alrighty then. Well, in that case, it's time for everybody's favorite part of the show, Brandon's Random Factoid. And a couple nights ago, I sort of talked about pro wrestling and how, you know, there was a time period when there was this time period where the idea of like having like a national sort of, you know, wrestling agency, that, you know, promotion that was like the whole country was actually a fairly new idea. Up until like the early 80s, it was mostly like a bunch of like regional places, until Vince McMahon finally gobbled them up. And so what ended up happening is that whenever any other promotion wanted to get into like the big dogs, they basically also had to go national. So that's eventually what happened to, say, like WCW. And that's also what ended up happening to Extreme Championship Wrestling, that is ECW. And what ECW did was they sort of, what they did that was different from the other ones is that they really doubled down on the grimier, more violent aspects of pro wrestling. For a long time, there's, you know, after, you know, the WWF really took off in the 80s, there was this new sort of phenomenon that started showing up called backyard wrestling, which would be essentially sort of circling around to more or less to kind of like what pro wrestling's roots were. Because for those who don't realize it, pro wrestling was originally a sideshow attraction. All right. It was carny stuff.
Yeah. Carny shit.
Yeah. And much like with other carny shit, it's crooked as all hell. But, the thing about the backyard stuff was, because the WWF had been trying to make their whole promotions as kid-friendly as they possibly could, a lot of the stuff that, like, a lot of old-school pro wrestling used to have sort of went by the wayside. A lot of the, like, pro wrestlers in the WWF, they had, like, really cartoonish gimmicks and characters that they would go by with these really larger-than-life sort of superhero storylines and things like that. Compared to like a lot of like old school wrestling where, yeah, they had characters and everything, but a lot of the wrestlers tended to go by like their real names and, or had like regular normal names, and they didn't have like outlandish costumes or anything. And the other thing that a lot of them did was, they would occasionally get a little more violent than the WWF was willing to do. We're talking things like, you know, obviously like with the WWF, the most extreme they were willing to go really was like a, you know, a chair shot to the forehead. And that was about it. You know, maybe Jim Duggan would be able to hit a guy with his 2x4, and that's about it. But the backyard wrestling thing did something even more extreme than that. They started doing stuff like having like, glass cylinders, you know, like the industrial lighting type stuff, those light bulbs, and hitting them people and having people crash into them, and, you know, throwing them on top of tables that had a bunch of those things on them, or, having, you know, bats with like razor wire on them, or, you know, having the ring ropes being replaced with barbed wire, you know, that would occasionally have a mild electrical current going through it. You know, and this stuff originally really like took off in places like in Japan, because if you look at like what a lot of the pro wrestlers in Japan are willing to put up with compared to what wrestlers in the U.S. were willing to do at the time period, it's insane. And then comes ECW. And ECW basically took all of the grimy old violence and all the sort of grittiness of the backyard wrestling, and they tried to make it mainstream. And they were wildly successful, but nobody wanted to touch them. And it wasn't, and they were, but they got really big and got to the point where in 1996, they were fixing to have their inaugural pay-per-view special. It was called Barely Legal. And then it ended up getting temporarily canceled. And the reason is because of something called the mass transit incident. Now, in the pro wrestling world, the mass transit incident is one of those things that has become the stuff of legends, because a lot of the pro wrestling business essentially was forced to make drastic changes because of what happened in this. But basically what you need to know is this. On November 23rd in 1996, ECW was running what was called a house show. Now, a house show in pro wrestling terms is essentially a wrestling event that is not televised. It can be recorded, you know, by people in the audience, but it is not publicly televised. It's usually used as a way to like cash in on exposure and to sort of like do like a test, like test audiences for like a reaction to potential new wrestlers or potential matches or matchups or storylines they may be thinking of. It's kind of like the pro wrestling equivalent of like workshopping something. And this particular match involved probably the guy who is considered the single most infamous figure in modern pro wrestling, and that is Jerome Young, aka New Jack. New Jack, when he was alive, and he's not around anymore, he passed away a couple years ago from a heart attack. New Jack was infamous for two things. One, for the absolute crazy shit that he was willing to get up with to make the match exciting, and two, for often taking it way too damn far. New Jack was one of the first wrestlers who, in the pro wrestling world, they call a, quote, garbage wrestler. That doesn't mean that they were bad. It means that they tended to really take advantage of random foreign objects when it came to their matches. And New Jack, when he was in the ECW, he was famous for basically dragging this garbage can into the ring that was loaded with all of these like random, like, you know, pieces of like chain link and 2x4s, bats with barbed wire wrapped around it, scalpels, stuff like that. And he was infamous also for basically diving off of like insane heights to, you know, do like really crazy shit during matches. He famously, in two separate occasions, he wrestled another ECW star, Vic Grimes. The first time he did, Vic Grimes ended up messing up one of the dives from it. He ended up landing on top of New Jack's head and cracking his skull open. And then the second time, New Jack ended up doing Vic Grimes on a scaffold match, and he ended up throwing him off the scaffold and almost threw him onto the concrete floor that was like 40 feet below. Yeah, that was New Jack. But New Jack was also, I'll just straight up say it, New Jack was a straight up psychopath. Like, legitimately, he was. Anybody who ever like saw him do interviews, he showed no remorse for any of the shit he ever did. And like, the dude had like a legit rap sheet is what I'm talking about. Anyway, so November 23rd, 1996, Wonderland Ballroom in Massachusetts. ECW, they were getting ready to do this house show. And one of the matches at this was going to be a tag team match. It was going to be between Axel Rotten and Devon Dudley against the tag team group, the Gangstas. That was the tag team that was made up of New Jack and his partner, Mustafa Saeed. Unfortunately, Axel Rotten had to no-show at the last minute because there was a family emergency. According to New Jack, it was like a death in the family, a bereavement, something like that. At the same time, there was also this other more novelty match that was going to happen between these two dwarf wrestlers, guys named Tiny the Terrible and Half Nelson, against this guy named Eric Kulas, who at the time was performing at, under the name Mass Transit, where he was basically playing like a pissed off bus driver that, you know, did wrestling on the side. So when the news came out that Rotten wasn't going to be able to make it, Kulas decided to step in, and he went and he talked to Paul Heyman. Now, Paul Heyman was the owner and booker for ECW at the time, and he convinced him to fill in for Rotten by claiming that he had wrestled for Killer Kowalski, who was a retired star wrestler who ran a notable wrestling school in the Boston, Massachusetts area. Just one problem. Eric Kulas was 17 at the time. He lied to Hyman, told him that he was in fact 19. So, strike one, right? Now, according to New Jack, he had attempted to actually tell to dissuade Kulas to not go through with the match. Instead, Kulas asked New Jack to blade him since he had never done it himself, to which New Jack agreed. Now, if you're wondering what blading is, if you've ever seen one of those pro wrestling matches where there's blood everywhere, you know, guys are bleeding, there's, you know, stuff coming out of the head, you know, out of the face, the chest, all that stuff. A lot of that is caused not by like legit injury, but by blading, where they'll usually have like a small little razor blade or some type of sharp piece of metal. That they will usually they'll have it wrapped in like a piece of like in like a towel or like a tablecloth or something where they can safely store it away out of sight. And so when nobody is looking, they can just cut themselves with it and they'll start bleeding on command, more or less. And New Jack himself was famous for not only blading himself, but blading other people as well. Essentially, and also according to New Jack, something else that happened that he really didn't like. Apparently, Kulas went over to him before the match started, and he said, like, here's all these things I want to do to you, you know, during the match. And New Jack sort of took offense to that because he felt like that, you know, he was stepping over the line. So during the match, amongst other things that happened, Devon Dudley and New Jack ended up brawling outside the ring while Saeed and Trance had fought inside the ring. And eventually the idea was to have like Dudley isolated outside the ring and told not to return, because the idea was that they would end up ganging up on the other person in the tag team. So then the tag teams then double team Kulas inside the ring with New Jack pummeling him with crutches, toasters, pieces of metal, and various other objects in the the hardcore style that ECW was famous for. And then at the end of the match, New Jack then took out a surgical scalpel. At least that's what he said it was. It could have been something else. And he ended up cutting Kulas too deeply in the forehead. He screamed in pain, and then as blood poured out of his head, lost consciousness and passed out. Now, according to New Jack, according to the footage of the match, you can see New Jack sort of leaning in and is like, dude, you okay? And Kulas sort of nods his head like, yeah, I'm fine, before he, you know, passes out. And for the record, he didn't just cut him in the forehead. He cut two arteries in his forehead, which meant that he basically lost a shit ton of blood during the time. So, after that was then done, the gangsters then proceeded to work Kulas even more with elbow drops and a bunch of other objects, finally prompting Kulas' father, who was in the audience, to scream, quote, ring the fucking bell, he's 17. Medics then rushed into the ring to aid Kulas. New Jab grabbed the house microphone and, in an attempt to guard a heat, shouting, I don't care if the motherfucker dies. He's white. I don't like white people. I don't like people from Boston. I'm the wrong to fuck with. By the way, I should point out that sort of New Jack's whole thing was that he was like his sort of like gimmick was that he was basically a pissed off black militant from Los Angeles who was like, you know, and keep in mind, this was like during the years before and after the LA riots and stuff. So when he started out, he was in a part of the country that was mostly white people. You can kind of thank Jim Cornette for helping to develop, to basically create a monster, more or less. But anyway, so Kulas ended up getting rushed to the hospital. He had to get 50 stitches, and legal action was brought against New Jack. The pay-per-view event, Barely Legal, had to be canceled. It would not air until the following year, 1997. This is from Wikipedia. According to Kulas and his family later gave an interview to the syndicated tabloid program Inside Edition, which featured footage from the incident. The segment depicted Kulas as an innocent, unprepared victim while vilifying ECW, even going as far as showing that Hyman had not asked for any state identification. The story was completed before the Kulases launched their lawsuit, so the key details of how loose Kulas actually got himself into the match had not been made public at that point. 3 years later, New Jack was tried on charges of assault and battery with a dangerous weapon and was later sued by the Kulas family. After hearing Kulas asked to be cut, a jury acquitted him, and he was later found not liable in civil court. Wrestlers testified that Kulas was extremely arrogant and demanding backstage prior to the match, and when told that he would have to bleed as part of the match, Kulas had asked New Jack to blade him since he had never done it. In the book, The Rise and Fall of ECW, it also states that the medic crew carried Kulas out. He was escorted by Tommy Dreamer, who held his hand to comfort him. Passing by the audience, Kulas began giving them the finger in an attempt to, quote, play the bad guy. Authorities later determined that Kulas had lied to Hyman about his age and experience. He claimed to be 21 years of age, but he was actually 17. He also claimed to have been trained by Killer Kowalski, and his father supposedly vouched for him, but Kulas was actually never trained to wrestle. In The Rise and Fall of ECW, Hyman says Kulas' dubious credentials as a student of Kowalski were endorsed by Tiny the Terrible. Kulas himself died at the age of 22 in 2002 due to complications from gastric bypass surgery, and it was featured on a 2020 episode of Dark Side of the Ring. Up to his own death in May 2021, New Jack did not express remorse for the incident. His final tweet on his Twitter account reiterated Kulas' request of the blading. So, yeah, because of this incident, a lot of, like, it not only, like, severely hampered ECW, it also essentially brought the whole sort of hardcore wrestling thing inadvertently into the mainstream, made it extremely controversial. It also brought the whole sort of backyard wrestling culture into mainstream attention as well. And because of this, there's a lot of, like, new, like, legal shit that people have to go through if they're going to go through, like, one of these matches. Like, you got to do, like, legal disclaimers. You got to make sure to have, you're legally required to have medics on standby. Just a bunch of shit like this. That was the mass transit incident. And that was yet another installment of Brandon's Random Factoid. So, with that out of the way, it's now time to move on to the show proper. And as always with the show proper, we start off with our assholes of the week. And our first asshole of the week is Rudy Giuliani. He has been ordered to turn over his New York City apartment and 26 different watches to the Georgia election workers that he currently owes $148 million for defamation.
Yeah. So that's a hell of a list of stuff to turn over.
Mm-hmm.
This is New York City apartment, more than two dozen luxury watches, and also a 1980 Mercedes once owned by movie star Lauren Bacall.
Mm-hmm.
The U.S. District Judge Louis Lyman in Manhattan also said Giuliani does not have to give the election workers three New York Yankees World Series rings or his Florida condominium for now, noting those assets are tied up in other litigation. The property Giuliani must relinquish is expected to fetch several million dollars for Ruby Freeman and her daughter, Wandrea Shea Moss. They won the $148 million judgment over Giuliani's false ballot fraud claims against them. Yeah, under Tuesday's order, Giuliani must turn over within 7 days his Manhattan apartment, estimated at more than $5 million, as well as his interest at about $2 million that he says Trump's 2020 presidential campaign owes him for services. Also, the list of assets that must be given over to Freeman and Moss are 1980s Mercedes-Benz SL500, previously owned by Lauren Bacall, a shirt and picture signed, respectively, by Yankees legend Joe DiMaggio and Reggie Jackson, a signed Yankee Stadium picture, a diamond ring, costume jewelry, and 26 watches, including a Rolex, 5 Chinolas, 2 Bulovas, and a Tiffany & Company.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he estimated the worth of the Mercedes at about $25,000, and the watches, World Series rings, and costume jewelry at about $30,000. Mm-hmm. The value of his sports memorabilia was unknown. One of his watches was given to Giuliani by his grandfather and asked that he be allowed to keep it because of the sentimental value, but the judge rejected the request. So, saying Giuliani could have had it exempted if he had proven it was worth less than $1,000, but he did not do so.
Mm.
So, good riddance to a bunch of his shit.
Yeah.
Fortunately, he can't get more of it until other court cases are dealt with. So, yeah. That's fine. Mm. I guess the World Series rings, his son, Andrew Giuliani, filed court documents that says those are his rings.
Mm-hmm.
Says his father gave him 4 rings, one for each of the Yankees championships in 96, 98, 99, 2000 as mm-hmm. gifts in 2018. Which seems like the sort of thing you would do. Like you know when you're going to get a divorce that you sign a bunch of stuff over to your friends
mm-hmm.
so that it can't be given out in the divorce, that kind of thing.
Mm.
That'd be funny if that's why all this stuff is hung up in legal battles. So,
mm-hmm.
there you go. Fuck Rudy Giuliani.
Yeah, seriously. With a rusty spoon. Yeah, so, and now we got these two stories because the top brass of two different major publications essentially pushed out at the last minute and decided to not put forth presidential endorsements. Starting off with the LA Times, the editor resigned after the paper's rich owner blocked their Kamala Harris presidential endorsement article. This came on the toes of the Washington Post suffering the same issue as Jeff Bezos blocked their endorsement of Kamala Harris.
Yeah, this is the thing that people worried about mm-hmm. with rich owners owning these newspapers, that they can sort of, whenever they want, you know, block editorials going up
mm-hmm.
Because it interferes with their financial interests.
Yep.
Which in this case is because Trump has been saying lately that he's going to go after any media that's been talking, you know, mess about him
mm-hmm.
if he wins. And I guess these guys are very much in trying to stay on Trump's good side, I guess, which is dumb because one, nobody really cares about newspapers, you know, endorsements.
Mm-hmm.
Ultimately, this is the Streisand effect for both of these papers.
Yep.
They could have just let those go out and nobody would have cared because nobody reads newspapers or, you know, makes their decisions based off of these newspaper companies
mm-hmm.
Putting out their endorsements.
Yep.
There's maybe more value in the, like, lower ballot stuff.
Mm-hmm.
On that, but yeah, nobody's like, oh, I'm gonna vote Kamala Harris because the LA Times said they endorse her, so
mm-hmm.
But yeah, now you know that they're owned by that, and a lot of people that have been subscribing to these papers have canceled them as mm-hmm. a result, showing their disinterest in supporting them,
mm-hmm.
Which obviously does not hurt the rich owners in any way, shape, or form.
Mm-hmm.
It more makes the people that are still there more vulnerable to cuts and such, but also it's not like that's a guaranteed mm-hmm. thing either way on mm-hmm. that stuff. So yeah, it just kind of makes this a shitty situation, and the reason that nobody really thinks of these media organizations as really independent if they can't do one boring editorial without the owners getting involved in blocking it.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, there you go. There's the The owners of the LA Times and the Washington Post deciding to burn their papers down, essentially over a minor editorial.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, there you go.
Yeah. And now for another group, that a couple that are just genuinely awful. This couple ran a funeral home that had 190 decaying corpses, and it has been indicted on 15 federal counts related to both wire fraud and conspiracy charges.
Yeah, this happened in Colorado.
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to see if there's a specific place here, but yeah, they run the Return to Nature funeral home that touted its services being more natural, pledging to cremate or bury bodies without using embalming fluids or metal caskets.
Mm-hmm.
But in the process, they ended up taking on way more jobs than they could handle. Mm. And rather than dealing with that as best they could, they seemed to just try to get as much money as they can and run.
Mm-hmm.
They're accused of taking money from customers and a pandemic relief fund and spending it on themselves, paying for things like travel, plastic surgery, and expensive cars.
Mm-hmm.
They've been charged with numerous state and federal crimes. In April, they were indicted on 15 federal counts related to wire fraud and conspiracy charges.
Mm.
They had been set to begin a jury trial on the fraud charges last week. But as that date approached, they asked to change their pleas to guilty after a hearing where victims' families were able to listen by audio conference. The plea agreement, which stipulates that prosecutors will not request over 15 years imprisonment, so it has to be approved by the judge, and it's unclear when that will happen. Federal prosecutors said the pair operated two fraudulent schemes that together netted just under $1 million. On one hand, they funneled $882,300 from a COVID-19 relief fund for businesses. On the other, they victimized customers who paid for their loved ones' remains to be treated legally and with respect. But in reality, the Halfords' funeral home turned into a macabre and ghoulish house of horrors. The bodies were stacked like cordwood and left to decay and decompose.
Mm.
And the cops about a year ago had to check on the place because people had discovered or had noticed a horrific odor coming from the facility.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, that's some fucked up shit. And I guess also part of this. In October 2020, the husband sent a text telling his wife that they had four possible options: build a new crematory machine, dig a hole and use lye on the bodies, burn the bodies in a hole, or D, I go to prison, which is probably what's going to happen.
Mm.
So they seem to see this coming.
Mm.
But yeah, there you go.
Yeah. So we have that happened. We also found out this week that Russia is getting help from North Korean troops in its war on Ukraine, which is kind of a sign of just how badly it's going for them.
Yeah. As there's been talks of the EU needing to beef up its defense systems because, Russia may come calling for them at some point, but this war in Ukraine has not gone well for them at all, because they probably expected to steamroll them early on, and now we're here at least, 2 years later?
Mm-hmm.
2.5 years later, that almost 3 years, being like, well, this is kind of just a dumb stalemate at this point, but until Russia wants to concede and just back off, they're going to continue to get funding there.
Mm-hmm.
At least unless Trump gets into power, because he's not going to go against his buddy Putin at all. But the U.S. said Wednesday that 3,000 North Korean troops have been deployed to Russia and are training at several locations. On the move, very serious, and warning that those forces will be fair game if they go into combat in Ukraine. The point raises the potential for the North Koreans to join Russian forces in Ukraine and suggest expanded military ties between the two nations as Moscow seeks weapons and troops to gain ground in a grinding war that has stalemated after more than... So, yeah, that's definitely a not great evolution of this war, but I don't know that it's going to really change too much unless these soldiers are somehow super soldiers or something.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, it's got to be wild to be sort of in a sheltered country like that and being told, like, you're going thousands of miles away to go fight a Russian war.
Yeah.
But yeah, there you go.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And last but not least, Israel conducted a retaliatory airstrike against Iranian military targets.
Yeah, as they just continue to be kind of a wild card in the region now. Going after various fronts now.
Yeah. Apparently, it was largely, they didn't really do much, really any serious damage. There's not been any news of any civilian casualties or anything. So, yeah, it was sort of like, you know, throwing a glass against a wall. Like, sure, there's damage and there might be a stain on the wall, but nobody's got hurt. And it just makes them look like petulant little children. But,
yeah.
That's about it for that.
Yeah.
But fortunately, we do have Heroes of the Week to sort of coincide with all that awfulness. And wow, that was a lot. Our first Heroes of the Week are the players of the WNBA union. They have opted out of their collective bargaining agreement to aim at securing higher salaries for players.
Yeah, the WNBA players union has opted out of their collective bargaining agreement.
Mm-hmm.
Because the WNBA has done incredibly well after this most recent season.
Mm-hmm.
Setting records in attendance and ratings. The league has embarked on an ambitious expansion plan to build on this year's success.
Mm-hmm.
With a new team set to debut next season, followed by two more in 2026.
Mm-hmm.
A new media rights agreement reached this summer has multiplied the league's TV revenue for years to come.
Mm-hmm.
But salaries have yet to reflect that success. The current union agreement provides for a rookie minimum salary of $64,154,
mm-hmm.
to a veteran supermax of $241,984. And as a result, many players spend the WNBA offseason playing in international leagues to supplement their income. The president of the WNBPA is Seattle Storm forward Nneka Ogwumike, who's... Mm-hmm. They're saying if we stay in the current agreement, we fall behind. Opting out isn't just about bigger paychecks. It's about claiming our rightful share of the business we've built, improving
mm-hmm.
working conditions, and securing a future where the success we create benefits today's players and the generations to come. So,
mm-hmm.
yeah, so this opt-out allows for the current agreement to remain in place through the next season in 2025. If the league and players are unable to reach a new deal within a year,
mm-hmm.
work stoppage could begin after next year's season comes to a close.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, wishing the best for them to get better pay and benefits for them and their teammates. So, mm-hmm.
maybe
they'll be able to afford flying private
mm-hmm.
instead of doing what they have been, flying like public flights and having to deal with occasionally some just jerks in the airports and such.
Yeah, seriously.
Way too close access to them.
Mm-hmm. And the other Hero of the Week we've got is, of course, the current president, Joseph R. Biden, made a public apology for the U.S. government's running Native American boarding schools. Yeah, it turns out Canadians weren't the only ones who did this shit. We did them too.
Yeah. They had federal government ones.
Yep.
I think also ones that were run by the church, the Catholic Church,
mm-hmm.
Much like in Canada. He has had a big thing here saying the federal government has never formally apologized for what happened. I formally mm-hmm. apologize as president of the United States of America for what we did.
Mm-hmm.
It's long overdue. And calling this one of the most horrific chapters in American history,
mm-hmm.
Where they ran more than 400 schools that for over 150 years separated tens of thousands of American Indian, American Native, mm-hmm. or Alaska Native, and Native Hawaiian children from their parents in order to assimilate them and exposing them to abuse or even death.
Mm-hmm.
Biden said that most Americans do not know about the government's role in this because it's generally not taught in most school books.
Mm-hmm.
The report from the Interior Department found at least 973 children died in the schools. The Interior Department report also called for an official apology among other recommendations.
Mm-hmm.
As he said here, we do not erase history. We remember so we can heal as a nation. Which I believe during this speech, there was a person who interrupted talking about Palestine.
Mm-hmm.
He was very much like, let her speak. Don't do anything to her, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Letting her say her thing. So ultimately good overall. Mm-hmm. Something that needs to be addressed at some point, and better late than never, I guess. But mm-hmm. yeah, better to acknowledge this, apologize, and work towards making things better for the future.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, there you go.
Mm. So yeah, we got that. So with that, we're moving on from the show proper to the proper show proper. And our first major story for the night is that the Biden administration is proposing a new rule that is requiring insurance companies to cover cost of contraceptives. Contraceptives, yeah. Not contraceptants. Yeah.
Yeah. They expand access to contraceptive products, including making over-the-counter birth control and condoms free for the first time. Mm-hmm. For women of reproductive age who have private health insurance.
Yeah.
This is under the proposal by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, Labor Department, and Treasury Department, which was announced by the administration on Monday. Health insurance companies will be required to cover all recommended over-the-counter contraception products, mm-hmm. such as condoms, spermicide, emergency contraception, without a prescription and at no cost.
Mm-hmm.
It also require private health insurance providers to notify recipients about the covered over-the-counter products.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the proposed rule comes as the Biden administration seeks to expand access to contraceptives and other reproductive health, mm-hmm. including access to abortion, has become a central issue in the presidential election here. So, mm-hmm. Yeah, that is great news.
Mm-hmm.
Making it easier for people to get access to this stuff. Although convenient that it's mainly intended for women.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they're the ones already going there for birth control pills and that kind of stuff. So
mm-hmm.
an easier time versus getting guys to go to pick up condoms, that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But
yeah. Yeah, so that sounds like a good idea. Just, you know, hope that, you know, they know how to properly use all that stuff. Because, yeah. You know, like, you know, if you got, you know, at least somewhat okay sex ed when you were a teenager, then you do more or less know how to use all that stuff, you know, like, you know, especially with the condoms, because there is like a specific way you have to put them on, and you have to be careful about things like them tearing or stuff like that, you know. If your health teacher / you know, gym coach whips out a pickle or a banana or a cucumber, you know what's going to happen. That's all I'm going to say. Anyway, next story. The Department of Justice attorneys are calling out the hypocrisy for the Attorney General's handling of crimes committed by Israel.
Yeah. Basically, calling out the glaring gap between the department's approach mm-hmm. to crimes committed by Russia and Hamas. Mm-hmm. Versus the department's silence on potential crimes committed by Israeli forces and civilians.
Mm-hmm.
They put out this 4-page letter explicitly calling on the department to investigate potential crimes
mm-hmm.
committed by Israeli soldiers and civilians, including the killings of mm-hmm. American citizens in the West Bank and Gaza.
Mm-hmm.
Saying here, in prosecuting crimes committed by Russia, Hamas, and other wrongdoers, the department has mm-hmm. appropriately demonstrated its commitment to upholding the rule of law in the midst of ongoing geopolitical conflicts, but against the backdrop of numerous potential violations of U.S. law by individuals and entities affiliated with Israel, the department's silence and apparent inaction is a stark omission.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, that seems like a reasonable request to make.
Mm-hmm.
They'd be better about that stuff because mm-hmm. yeah, a number of U.S. citizens have been killed.
Mm-hmm.
Especially, let's see, 4 U.S. citizens killed this year in the West Bank and Gaza Strip. The families, mm-hmm. The victims' families say by Israelis, despite demands from the Americans' families that the department investigate.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, they signed this anonymously as your colleagues.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, that's a good plea for some better coverage of this stuff. Especially for Israel
mm-hmm.
and their crimes. So, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, yeah, that's happening. Then we got this little story from Boeing. Boeing posted a humongous $6 billion loss as their striking workers won a new contract. Now, obviously, Boeing is going to get, you know, has had to deal with a lot of shit the last couple of years because of their terrible business practices. But then now they've got, you know, workers on strike as well. So obviously they've lost a ton of money because of their stupidity.
Yeah. Yeah. Cause like the loss here is on the execs here making bad decisions in the name of, you know, making as much money as possible over the notion of doing their business correctly.
Mm-hmm.
And making safe products for their contracts that they need to. But yeah, this strike has been in its 6th week. I believe they just shot down a contract that was offered this past week. So they are continuing to push for a better deal.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, even before this strike, the company was grappling with production and quality control issues that limited production of its best-selling 737 line.
Mm-hmm.
The company also reported major losses in its defense and space business.
Mm-hmm.
Their new CEO has announced plans to lay off roughly 10% of its workforce. So yeah, they are working to try to get their money back in order. But yeah, they really need to be paying their people better and putting more of a focus on, you know, quality work versus fast work and all that. So. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And speaking of, honestly, kind of shitty airlines, America Airlines has been fined $50 million for its treatment of passengers with disabilities.
Yeah, this is terrible to hear. Citing numerous serious violations of the laws protecting airline passengers with disabilities, the U.S. Department of Transportation fined American Airlines $50 million on Wednesday. This follows an investigation by the DOT that found violations at American over a 4-year period between 2019 and 2023. They say it uncovered cases of unsafe physical assistance that at times resulted in injuries and undignified treatment of wheelchair users, in addition to repeated failures to provide prompt wheelchair assistance. The investigation also determined American mishandled thousands of wheelchairs by damaging them or delaying their return. As Pete Buttigieg said, the era of tolerating poor treatment of airline passengers with disabilities is over. With this penalty, we are setting a new standard of accountability for airlines that violate the civil rights of passengers with disabilities by setting penalties at levels beyond a mere cost of doing business for airlines. We're aiming to change how the industry behaves and prevent these kinds of abuses from happening in the first place. So, yeah, that is good news. We've definitely seen some examples of this, of these issues. Even recently, there have been some of those that have popped up for different airlines where they just don't either train people too well, or the people they do hire seem to have some serious issues with disabled people and helping them get on the that they really should not have. Considering they want money, and guess what? Disabled people have money to spend as well.
Oh, yeah. That we do. So, yeah. Got what you deserve, jackasses. Anyway, moving on to other people getting what they deserve. Olivia Nuzzi has left New York Magazine after her relationship with RFK Jr. became public.
Yeah. They have parted ways. Olivia Nuzzi, after she was placed on leave over a previously undisclosed relationship with then presidential candidate Robert F. Kennedy. They announced last month that she had violated its standards around conflicts of interest and disclosures by engaging in a relationship with a former subject relevant to the 2024 campaign, but reporting on the election, which she would not have been permitted to cover if leadership had known, which people figured out it was RFK pretty quickly. And I think I saw somebody note that she had a relationship with I forget who it was, but another journalist. I think it usually at CNN or somebody. And she was 21 and he was 55. It's like, so she must have a thing for older men. Nothing wrong with that, but it's There's also a power imbalance in some of these, which, yeah, that's I think it's not great, especially when you're in the media covering the presidential campaigns. You know, that's a big no-no there. So, yeah, she's going to be out of a job for a while. I'm sure somebody will pick her up eventually, but probably not for a while. So, yeah, there you go.
Yeah. And then we're moving on to one of those stories that's actually extremely unusual. There's been a big outbreak of E. coli at McDonald's across the country due to its raw onions. Now, there have been other fast food chains that have had like foodborne illness issues. You know, Taco Bell has every few years had issues where, you know, their lettuce or some of their produce ends up spreading some sort of foodborne illness, or Chipotle ends up having it. McDonald's, actually, this is extremely unusual for them, because those guys are like the super wizards of food engineering. That this actually managed to happen to them, of all people, shows, you know, how, well, just read the story.
Yeah, there's an E. coli outbreak that has been linked to McDonald's signature Quarter Pounder hamburgers.
Yeah.
That has sickened at least 75 people across 13 states.
Yeah.
At least 22 people have been hospitalized, including 2 people who have since developed serious complications that can lead to kidney failure, potentially after consuming fresh onions on the hamburgers sourced from the California-based Taylor Farms. CDC previously reported that 10 people had been hospitalized. I believe one person has died, unfortunately. It's been traced back to their source for onions. It has nothing to do with the dumb little publicity stunt that Trump did, where he worked at McDonald's for an afternoon, which they paid to have it shut down for the day and send the workers home.
Yep.
And literally, the food they had was stuff they bought earlier and then just reheated in a microwave.
Yep.
So Trump wasn't actually working the fry machine or anything.
Yeah, and you could tell he was, because he had no idea. You could tell he, not only was he not doing, but he had no idea how to work it. Because I've worked a fryer before, all right? And you don't work a fryer like that. I have the scars on my arms to prove it. But so like I said, though, for McDonald's, this is extremely unusual, because like I said, you can say what you want about their business practices or their product, but pretty much of all the major, you know, fast food chains, they're the ones who are probably the most hardcore about making sure that their products are safe to eat. So the idea they would have a foodborne illness issue it just doesn't happen.
Yeah.
So yeah. Fortunately for them, I don't like onions on my, so it wouldn't have been a problem for me. Yeah. And especially not those little weird little sliver mini onion shit that they put on those things. Ugh. But anyway, moving on from there, Harvey Weinstein has been diagnosed with bone marrow cancer. Boo fuckity who.
Yeah, sucks for him, but also he's been such a shitty person that nobody has sympathy for him with this. So, yeah. I'm sure they'll try to use this as a means for him not to go to jail. Maybe get found, I don't know, with some sort of judgment to not have to go to jail. But yeah, he doesn't really deserve any sympathy in all this. He almost died following his emergency heart surgery that we talked a while back. He had COVID at least a couple times, so I'm sure that didn't help at all. But yeah, there you go. Maybe he'll die soon and just save everybody the trouble.
Anyway. And now for something that is just going to piss you off by just how petty it is. The Cable Industry Trade Group has sued the Federal Trade Commission to block their click-to-cancel rule. Yeah. Because apparently they make so much money out of straight-up conning people.
Yeah. The NCTA The Internet and Television Association, joined by the Electronic Security Association, representing companies in the electronic life safety and security industry, and the Interactive Advertising Bureau, filed the lawsuit on October 22nd in the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals, seeking an order vacating the FTC's click-to-cancel rule, which is designed to let consumers more easily cut the cord on subscriptions without having to call people or go through complicated and all that. As it says here, petitioners respectfully request that this court hold unlawful, vacate, enjoin, and set aside the final rule and provide such additional relief as may be appropriate. So yeah, they're trying to stop this from going through and, you know, keeping them from having to do anything. Which is not how this should all go, but the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals is the, the kind of rogue circuit that could go their way on this front. So we'll have to see how this goes. And if it eventually fails, then we know who to blame for it. So there you go.
Yeah. Anyway, we're now moving on to the entertainment portion of the show. Our first entertainment story is Spider-Man will be back with Spider-Man 4 after Tom Holland agrees to return.
Yeah, somebody breaks the dreaded Spider-Man trilogy curse. As we now have a new Spider-Man movie from Tom Holland coming. It's set for July 24th, 2026. I believe it'll be filming early next year. So we'll have to see how that goes. But yeah, that should be cool to see, because yeah, the last one definitely left him off in an interesting place, as he essentially got the whole world to forget who Spider-Man is, who Peter Parker is, and now has to decide what to do with his life after that. Either find a means to get back into his friends' lives, or continue to do his thing as just Spider-Man. So yeah, we'll have to see how it goes.
And we also found out that Marvel's Blade has in fact been removed from their release calendar, because apparently they just cannot get this damn movie out.
Yeah, they can't seem to find people that will actually be able to make it. I think the only steady thing has been Mahershala Ali's been ready to do it, but
yeah,
It was dated for November 2nd, 2025, but instead Disney has replaced it with Predator Badlands, the sixth film in that franchise, and they added three untitled projects to the schedule for 2028 for Marvel movies, so there's other stuff going on, but yeah, Blade just doesn't seem to be able to get off the ground.
Yeah.
Because they've had multiple directors exit the film and all that, so yeah. You think a man that fights Draculas and vampires should be easier to do than whatever has happened here implies. They might get that game out before they ever get a movie out, which would be wild concerning how long games take to make.
Yeah. And speaking of game related stuff, Netflix has renewed Tomb Raider: The Legend of Lara Croft for season 2.
Yeah, should be cool.
So apparently it's done really well.
Yeah. And it's set up for that pretty well, because yeah, they ended on a cliffhanger of one of Lara's buddies has disappeared. And presumably she's going to go after her and see what shit's going on with that. As it kind of hints at here, the log line. When adventurer Lara Croft discovers a trail of stolen African Orisha masks, she joins forces with her best friend Sam to retrieve the precious artifacts, and so on and so forth. She goes all around the globe, discovers the secret history, and all that kind of stuff of the evil rich guy that's wants them for themselves. So yeah, that's your Tomb Raider story. That's a huge surprise. So yeah, there you go. That should be cool. Probably out in a couple years, so there you go.
Yeah. And now for trailers, we got an official trailer for Creature Commandos, which is this James Gunn vehicle that's an animated feature.
Kind of a Suicide Squad, but for non-human characters.
Yep.
As they basically go to a prison, max security prison for various creatures and non-human entities. One of which at least was human, but had a big radiation accident that caused them to turn into like a nuclear dude, I guess. As well as one, it's a robot that fought Nazis in World War II. Yeah, there's like a Bride of Dracula kind of character, a weasel dude, and I forget the last one. Oh, fish woman. Yeah. Looks super bloody and violent, like you might expect. So, yeah, that could be cool. It'll be starting on Max December 5th. So, yeah, that looks like that'd be cool. It also seems very much like, oh, we did Suicide Squad, but for other characters that you haven't heard. So, yeah, there you go.
Yeah. And last but not least, we got an official trailer for Hot Frosty.
Yeah, this is one of the Netflix holiday movies.
Yep.
They've got a couple like rom-com type stuff. This is one of them. With Lacey Chabert, who, 2 years after losing her husband, Kathy, Lacey Chabert, magically brings a handsome snowman to life with her scarf that, through his naivete, the snowman helps Kathy to laugh, feel, and love again as the two fall for each other. Just in time for the holidays and before he melts. So that's a pretty fun little trailer they have here. There's also a Mean Girls reference because I think she sees the TV with a Lindsay Lohan thing on and she's like, I went to high school with a girl that looked like that. So there's some of that. I think one of the other ones involves a woman trying to go to a Pentatonics Christmas Eve show. And the tickets are all sold out, so she tries a bunch of ways to get tickets and ends up falling in love with the guy that helps her. So, you know, there's that kind of stuff. And then there's another Lindsay Lohan holiday movie, which I think, she finds out that two resentful exes are forced to spend Christmas under the same roof after discovering that their current partners are siblings. So she goes to the holiday thing with her partner's family and finds out that his brother is her ex fiance, and then also the mom is Kristen Chenoweth, so she deals with so yeah, they got some decent looking stuff for the holidays. So yeah, there you go.
So yeah, with that, I do believe we've got ourselves a show, folks. Yes, we do. We have got ourselves a show. So if you liked what you, if you have been listening to us and you have a question for us to answer, or you have something you want us to read on the air, get in touch with us at letsweekenders@gmail.com. We got here linked for you. letsweekenders@gmail.com. It's right there on the show notes. Also, on top of Apple Podcasts, you can catch our little unscripted shenanigans at TuneIn, Google Play, RSS, archive.org, or pretty much any kind of, you know, podcast aggregator you can think of. So, yeah, we're going to go ahead and wind it down here. Thank you, Chris, for once again joining me on this little endeavor. For all of our listeners, both new and veteran, if you like what you hear, if you like the sounds that emerge from my mouth space, please do not hesitate to share us with your friends, your family, your casual acquaintances, your coworkers, your mortal enemies, or everyone in between, because they may hate you, but they may end up liking us. And with that, we're going to go ahead and end it here. When you hear us next, we will officially be in November, and we will be like, what, like 4 days away from when the election happens?
Yeah, and I think the, was it next weekend that we roll clocks back?
Yep, I do believe it is. So not only is it going to suddenly be getting darker earlier, but it's also going to be, well, let's just say the next week and a half is going to be eventful. Let me put it that way.
Yeah, since I went and voted early, I still get those flyers, and I'm getting like 4 a day now.
Yep, same here.
People, and it's like, stop.
Yeah.
I got two that are just for Republicans. They're like, Republicans need to vote early.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, I'm registered independent, so I don't get specific ones from just one party. I get both.
And honestly, like, that's us too. We get like three or four of them basically every day the mail goes out.
It's like, this is so wasteful.
It is. They waste so many trees putting that shit out.
Why do you have to send me, I probably have at least 20 from each of the candidates.
Yeah.
Like, you don't need to tell me that much.
Yeah.
I only want to know what party you're from.
That's This is why I wish we did what they do in Canada, where, you know, a presidential campaigning can only last like 2 or 3 weeks maximum.
Yeah, but then the USPS would probably lose out on a bunch of money. And they already don't have enough money as it is.
That's true. Good night, everybody.